Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Yeah, Troy and I visited. I'm certainly surprised that some teams missed on an opportunity to get him, but I know that Troy's going to take the best of that opportunity that he got, and I think he's going to a great team and coaches that understand his strengths and getting to go play with his former quarterback. So you can sit here and worry about what everybody else and their situation is, but I'm excited about the situation that Troy's walking into.
That's Dan Lanning, Oregon coach, talking about Troy Franklin, who dropped in the draft and fell into the arms of Bo Nix, his former college quarterback. He'll be with the Broncos. Nix is with the Broncos. Here to talk about it, Spencer McLaughlin, Locked On Ducks podcast, covers the Ducks. How surprised were you at Troy Franklin falling some in the draft?
Well, I can't say I was expecting it. I thought he'd be a second-round pick. I didn't think he'd get out of the second round, maybe early third, but to see him fall all the way to the fourth, I think it can be a really high value pick for the Broncos. And, you know, sometimes the NFL draft and scouting community knows things that we don't. And other times they are wildly off the mark. And I think they're category here. And, you know, I think being with a guy in Bo Nix who should be the starter, I mean, their quarterback room's nothing special. I don't think he's got anything to gain by playing Jared Stidham or Zach Wilson in there. I think if you work that connection to that level of comfort and familiarity, I think Troy Franklin can go have a really, really solid rookie season and develop into a great NFL wide receiver. I didn't think he was wide receiver one in this draft class, John, but I certainly didn't think he was wide receiver 17.
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously Devon Vele, the Utah wide receiver, also picked by the Broncos. If they stand pat, it's, you know, Josh Reynolds, it's Marvin Mims Jr., it's Troy Franklin. I think Franklin has a chance to play with Denver. Give me an idea. Bo Nix at 12 got some criticism for Sean Payton. How did you read that?
You know, I always thought Denver was a perfect fit. I frankly understand the people who think that Bo Nix is a reach at 12. But if you're looking at this from the standpoint of the Broncos, that's a big risk to take. And I think that if it were any other player at a position, you'd take the risk that he falls to you. But at quarterback, when you see him flying off the board, I think the Broncos got put in an impossible situation, which is we have to draft a quarterback. We can't not draft a quarterback. We're not going forward with Zach Wilson and Jared Stidham. That's not an option. And Bo was the sixth of six guys available that were seen as first-round caliber quarterbacks. And I think Bo Nix, if given the right situation, which I think he's got in Denver, is more than capable of being a good starting quarterback in the NFL. So if you take that into account, I don't think it's quite as big a reach, but I understand why you look at that and say, boy, is that really someone who you're thinking about as a top 12 pick? I mean, Patrick Mahomes was taken 12th overall. But the other thing you have to remember, John, is the crapshoot element of the NFL draft. I mean, it's Every single year, there are a bunch of quarterbacks who we think are going to work, and then they don't. There are a bunch of players we think are going to work, and then don't. And second, third, fourth, fifth round guys at the same position will go out and thrive. So whether you think, you know, Bo Nix is good enough to be a starting NFL quarterback determines whether or not you take him at 12. Not whether or not you think, well, is it a great value pick? Is it worth it? Like, no, you just have to be sure you get him on your team. The Broncos did that, and I think he's walking into a good situation.
Yeah, Sports Illustrated had a great, sort of story about how what explains the thinking with both Bo Nix to Denver and Michael Penix to Atlanta. Terry Fontenot, who is the general manager of the Falcons, was previously with the Saints. Sean Payton was with the Saints. You brought up 2017. In 2017, the Saints are sitting at number 11. The draft is unfolding in front of them. They believe they're going to get Patrick Mahomes. He's falling into their arms. That's the guy they wanted. Kansas City moves up, slips in front of them, trades with Buffalo, and steals Mahomes from the New Orleans Saints. I think Atlanta, there was some echoes of that with Atlanta grabbing Penix and echoes of that with Denver grabbing Bo Nix. That's the Sports Illustrated story was terrific, sort of telling how that went. You know, Oregon spring game happens amid this, Spencer. What were your impressions of Dillon Gabriel, Dante Moore, Austin Novosad, the quarterbacks in general?
Yeah, I thought Gabriel, to start with the guy who's going to start for the Ducks this year, there's no quarterback battle here. I thought Gabriel showed what Oregon fans wanted to see, which is this is a guy who, you know, can make some really accurate throws. It is not perfect, but he doesn't need to be. But he needs to be Dillon last year. Home is that same guy. Oregon can win the Big Ten. Oregon can make the playoffs. Compete for a national championship. He's definitely good enough to be in that sort of range. So I thought Gabriel was solid. He got off to a slow start. You know, he was not sharp in the early going. He missed a couple deep shots and a couple, frankly, weren't close. But, you know, then he started to dial in. I thought he made a great sideline throw and a contested catch to Evan Stewart, pinned it against his shoulder, being interfered with by the corner. And touchdown pass on the RPO to Justice Lowe was probably the best throw of the day. It was a tight.
Spencer's phone is breaking up a little bit. We're going to check on that. But, you know, he's just getting at sort of the room in general. The question I'm going to follow up with here once we get Spencer in a place where his phone reception is great is, you know, the quarterback room ultimately will be judged on how good the starter is. And I want to know from Spencer's point of view. Here, we got him back here now. Spencer, I'm going to ask you this. The quarterback room will ultimately be judged on how good the starter is. We both think it's going to be Dillon Gabriel. How close to the kind of year Bo Nix had can Dillon Gabriel get?
I think he can be 80, maybe 85% of it. You know, last year Bo Nix went for 4,500 yards and 45 touchdowns in that range, 3 interceptions. I don't think Gabriel can get to that sort of range. But last year, Gabriel at Oklahoma playing 12 games, whereas Bo Nix played 14, had 3,600 yards, 30 touchdowns, and 6 picks. So I think he can push for a 4,000-yard season. I think he can throw in the mid to upper 30s in touchdowns through the air. I think he can run for several more as well. And Oregon's offense can be, you know, about 90% of what it was last year. And last year was one of the best offenses in all of college football. And I think that, you know, with Gabriel at the helm, they can accomplish all of their goals because the weapons and support system around him is just tremendous.
Oregon's schedule includes the home game against Ohio State. I'm circling that one. But, you know, what you saw in the spring game, do you think that's a game? Is Ohio State coming to Autzen Stadium? Is that is that a game Oregon can win?
Yeah, they absolutely can. You know, Vegas has got them favored by 1.5 points right now, meaning on a neutral field, Vegas thinks Ohio State is slightly better. They've got quarterback questions in Columbus right now, which I'd rather be in Oregon's situation where Dante Moore and Austin Novosad, who Novosad especially I thought was just outstanding in the spring game on Saturday. He was, frankly, the most impressive of the three quarterbacks compared to the expectations I had for them going in. Knowing that you've got two guys who are essentially vying for the backup quarterback position, and it's probably Dante Moore, I'd rather have that with them having no chance at starting than what you have in Ohio State, which is, well, who's our starter really going to be? Because they brought in Will Howard, but then Ryan Day said just a couple weeks ago, and I talked to Jay Stevens of Locked On Buckeyes about this, They don't know. They haven't formally declared, as far as I know, that they have a starting quarterback. So I don't think that's the most ideal spot to be in right now. There's still time to figure it out, but I'd rather be getting the offense locked in and everybody know who the number one guy is. But they've got so many quarterbacks in that room that are closer together in talent. I think it's really fortunate that Oregon got Dillon Gabriel, where he's able to come in and clearly establish himself as the starter, given his pedigree and the track record he's got in college football.
All right, we've talked about the quarterback, but Bucky Irving was really good last season and very versatile and lethal out of the backfield. And obviously, you know, we've talked about Oregon losing a big-time wide receiver, Troy Franklin, to the NFL. Who are the two most likely suspects or prospects, better yet, to fill the shoes or the cleats of Troy Franklin and Bucky Irving?
Well, Evan Stewart, the Texas A&M transfer, I think slides in to be Oregon's number one wideout on the perimeter. I think Tez Johnson, who had a 1,000-yard season and set the Oregon single-season record in receptions, I think he leads Oregon in receptions. I don't know if he leads Oregon in yards, because Evan Stewart's got more downfield shot, big playability, and Gabriel likes taking those sorts of shots, and they linked up for one in the spring game on Saturday, and Stewart had created about 5 to 8 yards of separation. I mean, he's a crazy talent. Could be a first or second round NFL receiver next year, especially if he has a great year with the Ducks. So he's a guy I'd look to on the perimeter. For the backfield, I think Oregon's in a great spot. You could look at Noah Whittington and say, you know, going into last year, he was ahead of Jordan James on the depth chart. But, man, Jordan James looks really good. And he's, I think, increased his abilities as a pass catcher and, you know, showed it a little bit last year. And he's just running with a decisiveness and fluidity and power that makes it hard to look at anybody else to be RB1. I think this is a pretty solid backfield by committee, as it has been for the last couple of years. I think Whittington, assuming he's healthy, is RB2. But I think it's a pretty slim gap. So I think you've got really, really good guys to step in. And I don't think you have much of a drop-off at, frankly, either position from a talent standpoint. And when you have two guys who are taken in the fourth round of the NFL draft, that's a tough thing to say. But I think Oregon's in that position right now.
The defensive backs, and again, we're talking to Spencer McLaughlin, Locked On Ducks podcast. You can also find his work at 750thegame.com. Defensive backs, Jabbar Muhammad, interesting to me. I mean, he's new. He had a limited number of spring practices under his belt. He made a couple of nice plays. But it certainly, I think, became evident as I watched the DBs that there are a number of guys that played and started 5 or 6 games last year who might not be able to get on the field. They're that deep there. What do you like about the defense?
Well, I like that the corners are so deep. I've been waiting for someone else to enter the transfer portal, but unless I missed something while I was on the golf course today, that hasn't happened. And I think that for the Ducks, they are ridiculously deep at corner. I do think they're going to look at a safety in the transfer portal. That they've been tied to Texas A&M's Jacoby Matthews, and I'd expect them to continue pursuing him. They're not as deep at that position, though I thought Aaron Flowers, the true freshman, looked like he was ready to play football right here and now. Had some nice coverage moments, but really just hitting guys all over the field. I thought he looked great. But I think the depth in the secondary is there. I like the high end or the top end of the linebackers, John. I think as you go down the depth chart, there are a couple questions. Like, I think linebacker is the position where Oregon can least afford injuries. You've got Jeffrey Bosa and Justin Jacobs. Those two guys are studs. Bosa was all conference last year. Jacobs has battled injuries in his career. If he goes down, you know, Devin Jackson steps in. Coaches have been singing his praises. That's great. But you need more than two good linebackers at a time. And I think right now you have three proven linebackers if you're the Ducks, Bosa, Jacobs, and Devin Jackson. So I think that's the position where I'm not quite as confident that they'd have the depth to sustain some injuries, but I like the defensive front. I thought that was the biggest takeaway for the defense on Saturday was their ability to control the line of scrimmage. A lot of different young guys and returners looked really, really good and physical, controlled the point of attack, pressured quarterbacks. Tatum Tuioti had an awesome game. I think that unit up front has the potential to be the best on Oregon's defense this year.
Yeah, it looks like they're built to try to compete in the Big Ten, and we'll see how much competition they can have. All right, you know, this coming season we talk players, but I'm looking for some growth from Dan Lanning and his coaching staff. They are 0-3 against Washington. They lost a pivotal game a couple of seasons ago against Oregon State. I need big wins from Dan Lanning. It's why I kind of pause on that Ohio State home game, or maybe the game at Wisconsin. And I think they'll beat Washington, But I got to see it before I believe it, right? That kind of thing. What are you looking for from Dan Lanning in this offseason, and what areas do you think he needs to get better at before kickoff of week one?
Well, he's got to beat Washington. I mean, that, like, it doesn't matter who the coach is at this point. You know, Kalen DeBoer is one of the best coaches in all of college football, and certainly it's not as if Oregon was incapable of beating Washington last year. I mean, if they make a field goal, a 42-yard field goal from right in the middle of the field in otherwise solid conditions, they might win that game in overtime. Instead, they lose. And, you know, I think that Kalen DeBoer certainly outcoached Lanning in those particular contests. You know, as a head coach, I don't know that there's really anything else that he hasn't shown to this point. I think there's a narrative out there that he can't win or he hasn't won enough big games. I don't agree with that. I think that it's just been Washington. He had the meltdown against Oregon State. First year, first time head coach. That didn't happen in 2023. I mean, they got a big lead against Utah. They never came close to giving it up. They had a big lead against Oregon State. They never came close to giving it up. And, you know, this is a coach who's beaten Lincoln Riley. He's beaten Kyle Whittingham twice. They beat a top 10 UCLA team on College Game Day. I don't subscribe to the notion that he, you know, can or hasn't won big games. I think he's just got to go out and execute the game plan on the field. And I think that, you know, the only downfall of that Pac-12 title game was they didn't have a great game plan. They came out and they were throwing the ball a bunch. They threw it five of their first six plays, went three and out twice. And you compare that to what Michigan did. They came out, ran the ball. I think on their first four or five plays from scrimmage down the field, scored a touchdown. So I think that those are the sorts of things that he's got to get better at. But I don't think there's a big growth. I think he showed a lot of growth from year two. But, you know, running into a guy like DeBoer, that's like saying, you know, X, Y, or Z coach in the SEC, that's not any good. Well, Kirby Smart couldn't beat Nick Saban for a long time. Was he not any good? Did he need to prove it in the big games? No, the chips hadn't fallen his way. His DB blew a coverage on second and 26, and they didn't win a national championship. So I've seen coaches who are a lot farther away from getting to the highest level of college football. I think Lanning is right on the cusp of it. And I think he grew from year one to year two, and I expect Oregon to be a great team in year three.
Spencer McLaughlin, what'd you shoot on the golf course?
Can we leave out the last three holes? if we can leave those out, it'd be something good. But 77 today, and thinking about what should have been.
What should have been. I hope you had fun. Spencer, thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah,
appreciate you.
Anytime.
All right, there he goes, Spencer McLaughlin. I want to put this out to you as a listener. Do you think Dan Lanning has room to grow? Do you think he needs to grow? I am struggling to find what are his big wins? What are Dan Lanning's biggest wins? You know, he had a matchup with UCLA and Chip Kelly that felt big. He had a USC game that felt big. He won that one. He did beat Kyle Whittingham. What else? Didn't beat Washington three times. Lost a Pac-12 championship game. Lost to Oregon State in a game that would have cemented Oregon's position in his first season in the Pac-12 championship game. I do think that there was growth between year one and year two. But, you know, I go back and I listen to these radio shows and I'll ask myself, what worked? What didn't work? What do I need to get better at? I'll go back and read columns from a year ago, 2 years ago, and I'll go, gosh, what worked? What didn't work? What do I need to get better at? I don't know if you do that in your job. But I think every football coach has to be asking themselves, how do I improve? How do I get better? How do I become a better teacher? How do I become a better recruiter? Am I allocating my time in the right way? What am I not doing X and O wise as far as a game plan in front of, you know, Washington? I thought Oregon had a great game plan in front of the first Washington game last season. I thought Oregon was the better team. I thought they had a good plan. I think they messed the strategy up during the game. Pac-12 championship game, though, second time, I thought Kalen DeBoer and Washington did a better job of preparing their team, and I think they came into that game and they knew what their identity was and they played right to it. But I'd love to hear from you. Where are the areas of growth that need to happen at Oregon? We'll talk about Oregon State as well. Leave it here. You got the BFT.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
You tell me. Let's talk about Dan Lanning, Oregon coach. I like his trajectory. I like what he's done. I think he has room to grow. You tell me, what areas does he need to prove that he can be better or need to be better at? I think all the coaches know they need to be better. 503-417-7575. Trent Bray at Oregon State. Here's a question for you. What do you need to see that will make you believe that Bray will be all right at Oregon State? I think it's a fair question. I think it is just a question mark. You know, people say, did they hire the right guy? It's a question mark. Like, you know, I don't know. Brett Brennan at Arizona certainly had more experience. And, you know, he was interviewed as part of the hiring process that brought Trent Bray to Oregon State. But I get what Scott Barnes was doing. He was, you know, in a situation with Jonathan Smith going out the door where he needed to find something that he could tether the program to. And he went to a guy who was going to offer some stability and potentially help retain some of the defensive players. But what do you need to see from Trent Bray to make you believe? 503-417-7575. I'll go first. Want you to weigh in. There's no wrong answers here. But, you know, I'm going to start with Bray in Oregon State because I'm looking at Oregon State's schedule for next season. And their schedule obviously has the early matchup against Oregon. And for me, I don't see a way that Oregon State wins that game. Well, you know, and there's a potential for Oregon State to get embarrassed in that game. I just think they've lost too much. So much of the rest of the story is going to shape, you know, are they ready? But there are a number of games on Oregon State's schedule, including at San Diego State, home against Purdue, home against Colorado State, at Cal. There are a number of games that I would have penciled in as W's in the Jonathan Smith era of Oregon State football. But because of the attrition in the portal and because of the question that is Bray as the head coach, I'm really interested to find out what happens on September 7th in week two against San Diego State. The Oregon State rivalry game, that is, you know, that's one for fans. That's one for, you know, that week. We can talk about it, whatnot. But I think we're going to judge Trent Bray's first year on, like, the game at San Diego State, the game at home against Purdue, the game at home against Colorado State, the game at Cal on October 26th, and then maybe the season finale at Boise State. And I keep going, and I did this today with Oregon's schedule, and I went through Oregon's schedule, and I said, okay, you know, at my first pass, I had them, you know, with one loss. They're an 11-1 team. They're in the playoff, and that's a step forward for Dan Lanning. But in order for them to get to 11-1, I got to see Dan Lanning go on the road, win games, you know, play Ohio State at home, win the games he should win, beat Washington for the first time in his career. Like, there's some new things that need to happen for Dan Lanning. For Trent Bray, it's a totally different conversation because we have no proof of performance. We don't know what they're going to be. I don't know physically if Oregon State, when they line up on September 21 at home against Purdue, physically can they stay on the field in that game? Because in the Jonathan Smith era, that Purdue-Oregon State game was a pretty good game, right? That was kind of back and forth. Like, I don't know. I don't know what Oregon State's going to be. Steven, Trent Bray, let's start with him. How far into season one are we going to be able to figure out if this is the guy?
I kind of think it's going to be the whole season. I have a lot of questions about Oregon State and their football team right now, and I think Trent Bray has a lot of answers he has to give. I look at this schedule, John. Anything above six wins, I think, is a really good season. Like, I think this is going to be a tough schedule for Oregon State, and based off what they have returning now, I don't know that I can mark down certain games as wins that I thought I could before, whether that's Jonathan Smith was back again and they'd have Aiden Childs and they'd have Damian Martinez. Without those guys, like, there's a lot of positive games. At Cal, even the game against UNLV, who's a really good team, they're coming to Reser. At Air Force, like, I think that's a loss. Air Force is always really good. They play a different style of game. Like, there's a lot of games that are real toss-ups for me. It's going to be a whole season for me with Trent Bray. I need to see improvement week after week. I need to see guys developing, especially on the offensive side, because we know what he can do on defense. But can he help get those guys on offense in a better spot than they were before? I think anything above six wins is a really good season, but I could see where it's a five or six win season for him.
I think that what Oregon State needs to do is be bowl eligible. They need momentum. I think worst case scenario, they're not bowl eligible, but I'm looking upside here. And, you know, if I give them some upside, I could see them as an 8-win team. Now, I've talked to Beaver fans who think they're going to win 10 or 11 games and that the Oregon game is going to be close. I don't see it. I don't see it happening. I think Washington State is ahead of where Oregon State is on as far as momentum and trajectory because they didn't lose a head coach. They've got some guys back. Washington State's got Chris Hudson as a wide receiver. Washington State's got a freshman running back who rushed for 1,900 yards last year in high school and who got in school early and is in spring ball and is probably going to be the starter. And Washington State's got Jake Dickert back. And so, I just think Washington State has some momentum. So I think there are some pivotal games for Oregon State. I think they start with a win over Idaho State in the opener. But week two, that's a big game. Like, you're at San Diego State. San Diego State's got Sean Lewis. San Diego State might have, they might have better players. They might have more experienced players. Let's see what happens. And I think Oregon is going to win that Civil War game going away. Then comes Purdue at home, question mark. Like, can you stay in that game physically? Then Colorado State, again, a program that's got more momentum, got more trajectory. UNLV, you mentioned. Cal, I like Oregon State against Cal, but in most years. But given everything that Oregon State's lost, that's up in the air. Then comes Boise State. There's about six games on the schedule where I'm like, that's a big question. So I think, on the bright side, if Trent Bray figures some things out and if Oregon State can develop some of these players that, they had who didn't play in the scrimmage, if they're better on the offensive line than I thought, I think they'll win some of those games. They'll beat Nevada. They'll beat San Jose State. Maybe they can beat Air Force, so I think it could be a decent season. How about Dan Lanning? I talked about Lanning and what I need to see from him. What do you need to see?
I need to see a win over Washington. I need to see, a win, not necessarily over Ohio State, but I need to see one of those type of tiers of Michigan, Penn State. I think it's a one-loss season. You're in the College Football Playoff. Like, that's what I got to see. I know that Spencer said he believes in him and it's a false narrative. He has to show that he can win one of the biggest games yet. He hasn't won a conference title. And I think now going to the Big Ten, he's got to win some of these games, John. It's got to just show on the field. He does everything else great, but he's got to show some wins.
There are two games in particular that people aren't going to talk about that I think are pivotal for Lanning. Prior to Ohio State, a week earlier, it's Jonathan Smith and Michigan State coming to Oregon. Jonathan Smith has always played and coached those games well. His teams play well in those games. Be eager to see if Michigan State can kind of channel its inner Oregon State in that game. And is it a trap game for the Ducks, given that they have Ohio State a week later? Keep an eye on it. Second one comes November 16th. It's the week before Washington. All eyes are going to be on Washington. We're going to talk about this all summer. You know it.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Baldface.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Baldface Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Baldface Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.